You're listening to Inside of You with Michael Rosenbaum. Robert Hollis III is with me here.
Yep. The third.
Are you the third?
No.
Is just one Rob Hollis?
Yeah.
Is one
But enough? My dad is... So I'm Robert Gregory. My dad is Gregory Robert. So...
Do you think he sat there smoking a joint going, I got this idea. I'm Gregory Robert, but my son will be Robert Gregory.
If you knew my dad, that's definitely not.
He doesn't smoke? Does he snort Ritalin?
No.
What does he do?
None of those things. He's just a nice guy, nice old man.
Yeah. My dad's a grumpy old guy. How old your dad?
He was born in 45, so he's in his
70s. 65, 74.
74.
Holy crap. How old are you? You're 29?
30.
Yeah, but I'm 16 years older than you, and my dad is 10 years younger than your dad.
Yeah, my dad.
What the hell? This explains a lot. I think when older guys have kids, their kids are like... What I've known is from friends that have dads that are older when they had them later, they're just...
methodical?
Maybe. I don't know what the word is. Guys, help me out with that word. Hey, thanks for subscribing. Continue to subscribe.
And tell your friends.
Tell your friends. Rob, listen to Rob for a change. Rob, tell him what to do.
Yeah, Michael doesn't listen. So tell your friends to subscribe so Michael can keep making this show because he wants to quit.
You keep saying I want to quit. It's not that I want. I don't want to quit. I'm going to keep going with the show. But, you know, if you guys could tell five other people, because I think we're bringing in pretty good guests, pretty great guests, and they're interesting conversations. And I think people who do listen love it. And I thank you guys dearly for that. But, you know, we'd love to get more listeners. And if you could do that, help. You know, at work, you say, hey, grab their phone, subscribe. Great podcast today.
Steal five people's phones.
Yes.
And subscribe for Michael.
Exactly. That would really help in writer review. I really love you guys. Thank you. Today, Chris Sullivan from This Is Us, The Tick.
He's the voice of the Hump Day Camel.
Hump Day! Hey, guess what today is?
It's not. No, it's Thursday.
Yeah, he does the voice of the hump camel. He's been in tons of stuff, and we were in Guardians of the Galaxy 2 together. He had a bigger part, and we became friends, had him on the podcast, and he's just a wonderful human being. I really think you're going to dig this, because talk about a genuine guy with a lot of cool stories, married. I look up to this dude. He kind of keeps me grounded. Let's get inside Chris Sullivan.
It's my point of view. You're listening to Inside of You. Michael Rosenbaum.
Inside of You with Michael Rosenbaum was not recorded in front of a live studio audience.
When I was outside, I actually opened the garage door and I took off on my scooter. And that's when I saw you racing up the hill, and you have like sort of a cop car.
3 minutes before podcast time, and you're not preparing. You're zipping around the neighborhood
on
your
scooter,
on your Honda
fat scooter. No, it's a fat scooter. They're badass, and they gave it to me free. And
F-A-T?
I love this. Yeah, P-H-A-T.
P-H-A-T.
I love this thing.
Fat scooters. It did look like a really cool scooter,
right? Maybe you can get one. They'd
I don't
love
know.
To give
I
you
don't
a
know.
Free scooter.
Fat. If I live by the beach. And I need a little something to
Dude,
zip around
mode.
In.
Dude, it's got beach mode. It's got like...
See?
I mean, look, it's not even an expensive one, but they gave it to me for free. I mean, this is a great little scooter. But anyway,
Hold on, I'll get you one.
Oh, by the way, thank you for allowing me to be inside of you, Chris Sullivan.
It's my great pleasure.
This is a treat. Where do we meet?
Where did we first meet?
I think, you know, that's easy.
I mean, do we first meet on set?
I think we met in Atlanta on Guardians of the Galaxy 2.
Yeah, yeah.
And you were dressed up as Taserface.
Taserface. You didn't meet me... in person, in my own flesh.
Right, until I didn't know what you looked like.
Had dinner.
Is that true?
I think so. I think that was the first time we met.
Dinner, we had dinner. James Gunn took us all out to dinner in Atlanta.
Yeah. I had to go back to set on my day off just to introduce myself to people out of makeup because I would arrive at 5:30 in the morning.
So no one knew what you looked like?
No, not at all.
How many hours were you in makeup? I know that's a question you've asked all the time.
My makeup was not so bad because it was just my head. It started at like 3.5 hours, and they got it down by the time we were done to like 2.5 hours.
That's still a lot. That's about what I had when I had to shave my head. Could you believe just shaving your head and putting 3 layers of makeup took them 2 hours in the first couple of years to figure that out? But
why 3 layers?
Because you weren't supposed to see a hairline on Lex Luthor.
Right.
But anyway, so how many months were you on Guardians of the Galaxy?
Like a month.
That's it.
Yeah.
Just kind of the old in and out.
Like 18. A bit of the old in and out.
Yeah.
I think I went into makeup 18 times.
That's not that bad. So 18 times 3 is, roughly 50 hours of makeup.
Yeah. Not so bad. Not so bad. Karen Gillan was getting picked up at her hotel at 1 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah. She's a good spirit, man. She goes with the flow.
Yeah.
She's young though. I think that's what happens when you're young. You kind of go with it.
And well paid.
Well,
paid more than you.
I mean, I don't know. I'm only assuming she's a main character.
It seems like a Taserface character. You probably just were excited to be a part of that, and they probably didn't offer you a lot of money for it.
That's correct.
They probably said, hey, if you want to play this role in a huge movie, you'll probably get more in residuals than you will getting paid.
Correct.
Yeah. We're going to pay you, not scale, but maybe $10,000 a week.
We're going to give you the opportunity to hang out with these people and maybe have dinner with Michael Rosenbaum.
Oh, and that happened.
And I was like, I'm in.
Yeah. I appreciate that. But we kind of hit it off. You were just a nice guy. We had some laughs at dinner, but we didn't really, I didn't know that we would then be a couple of months, maybe a year down the road, finally sitting down and having lunch together.
Yeah.
Which was enormous for me because you meet a lot of people, but then you there's a few that you just that resonate. Just like, hey, I can actually hang out with this guy.
Yeah,
this guy rolls up in a cop car. You know, he's
we riff in the same rhythms.
We riff. I think you're smarter than me.
Well, I don't know about that.
Yeah, I think you're a bright guy. I don't think I'm an idiot.
What does smart mean to you?
Well, you're not only quick and witty, which is a sense of intelligence, but I think you're actually you're a thinker.
Yeah, I think you are too. I think that's why.
I don't know. I think certain things, and then you'll say something, and I'll go, "Oh yeah, I agree with that." Though I'm going to change what I thought.
I think
maybe that's maturity. Maybe that's being like, "Hey, I'm wrong."
I think it's less about being a thinking person, and this is new for me. Like I've
thinking,
like, yeah, yes, oh, in wow. the past few years,
okay,
becoming less of a person with ideas and more of a person with questions. Trying to be more curious.
Who am I? What am I?
No, who are you? Who are you? Yes.
Well, maybe we can get inside each other today.
I hope so.
I'm excited about this. So we met, and you know what? One of the things that struck me as not only being kind and supportive, like in the industry, it's always nice when someone says a comment unsolicited online about another person. When they're like, for instance, you said, I love your podcast. Mm-hmm. This is one of my favorite podcasts. Mm-hmm. I didn't ask you to say that.
No.
I didn't ask you to listen to it. You just said it, and it was a picture of me on your Twitter feed,
mm-hmm.
which is at...
Sullivan Grams.
Sullivan Grams. Yeah. That's not like Heather Graham. It's G-R-A-M-S.
Yeah, that's right.
Yes. Yeah. I was taken aback. I thought that was sweet, and it made me feel like I'm doing something right when someone you respect, someone who's a working actor, someone who's talented as you, to say, hey, I like what you're doing. That made me feel good.
I'm glad. I'm glad it made you feel nice. I think you made me feel nice, and I wanted to share that with anyone who would listen. I think there's a lot of people around us who are being creative, and when they're doing that, it's nice to give that creativity a friendly ear.
Tell me why.
Because...
Tell me why you like it.
You want to get deep inside me real quick? I think that...
what was it that you were listening? Yeah, said, that, oh, you know what? This is...
Well, on a grander scale, I think that creativity for me is where... We are all connected. I believe that is, for lack of a more common term, the God energy lives.
Right.
And when we are creating, we are connected. And the best way to connect with a person is on their creative level and to offer them your creative self. And so if you got a podcast, if you got music, I want to hear it and to see what you're all about.
Yeah. Yeah. And here you are.
And here we are. And now I'm in your basement.
Yeah. Which is... It's nice. Yeah. You're here with Rob. So far, you haven't heard anything great about Rob, but he is great.
I mean, I've listened to all of the podcast episodes.
You've listened to all of them?
Well, that's not true. I shouldn't say all. I mean,
which is your favorite so far?
Dax was a really good one. Yeah.
Yeah, he got a lot of hits, a lot of downloads on that one.
Yeah. He's a fascinating guy. I like him very much.
Yeah, he's a good dude. Yeah. Rob, he also does Dax's podcast on the side.
I've heard.
Yeah, you heard that from me.
I don't listen to Dax's podcast, but I like Dax very much.
Good, I appreciate that.
I only listen to this one.
No, really? That's nice. You listen to others.
I mean.
So let me ask you something. You seem like, you know, we've talked briefly about this, but growing up, you were in a dark place for a while in your life.
Sure.
I mean, you've had those.
Sure.
But let's rewind. I mean, did you have a good upbringing?
Totally. I grew up in Northern California in Sacramento. I was born down here. I was born in Palm Springs in the desert.
Really?
In Indio.
Was your family well off?
We never, I don't think I ever wanted for anything. We were middle class, middle upper class. My dad was working for the city of Desert Hot Springs as a city planner, then worked as a home builder, and we moved to Sacramento in 1986. And I lived up there, public schools until high school, where I went to Jesuit high school.
Were you religious?
I grew up Methodist.
Well, I get confused by all these things like Jesuit, Methodist. What is it? I mean, I don't want you to talk about religion too long here.
No, Jesuit. The Jesuits are probably the most progressive and liberal sect of the, if sect is the, even the right word, of the Catholic Church.
Right.
The current Pope is a Jesuit.
Yeah.
They have dedicated their lives to education.
And do you still do that? Do you still practice that in a way? Or do you just have a respect for it?
I have a respect for it. I ended up going to a Jesuit college as well. I went to Loyola Marymount here. And Methodist, the Methodist Church is a Protestant sect of Christianity that is also very liberal. A lot of the congregation I grew up in was very small, very diverse through race, sexuality. I believe one of our ministers was gay at one point, which, you know, in the 90s,
it was always difficult.
I mean, as a kid, I didn't even realize there was anything out of the ordinary about it because it was just right. Our church. But
so your parents were pretty liberal, so they taught you sort of like respect everybody.
Yeah. It was a pretty well rounded and active child.
And they were good role models. Your mom and dad.
Yeah, very much.
Brothers and sisters.
I have a younger brother who lives here in Los Angeles.
You guys close?
Yeah, we don't hang out too terribly much, but
my brother lives here, mm-hmm. and we don't hang out a lot.
Right.
We just opened a restaurant with some friends called The Rye Fox, which I have to plug on Beverly, which is dope. Great food, great atmosphere. Check that shit out, folks. Okay. I come by a lot. We could talk.
The Rye Fox.
The Rye Fox. It's badass.
Ask
for my brother Eric. Say hello. Don't harass him. Or you can. But you know, I love him. I do anything for him. He worked on the movie I directed. I'm there for him. But I don't see him a lot, and he's right around the corner.
Sure.
Is that similar to you?
Yeah, it's very similar. He
owns a bar, your brother?
He owns a bar called The Guy Fox.
The Guy Fox.
We have two different circles of friends, even though, you know, a decade ago they were the same circle, but I moved off to Chicago and New York and kind of, our lives just kind of took us in two separate directions. And like you said, I would do absolutely anything for him. We are there for each other when we need each other, but it's not like a daily check-in. A lot of people have that type of relationship with family members and for whatever reason, I don't know what that is. What is that?
I don't know. I think there's that, you know, I think here's what I feel like you're just two different people
mm-hmm.
because look, Rob and I are two different people. Obviously.
Yeah, we're not one person.
No, he's 29, he's got a kid, he's got a wife. You know, we don't hang out all the time, but we like softball, so occasionally we have softball. Plus, we work together, so it's a different thing.
Right.
But we're two different people. My brother and I are two different people. You know, he likes to booze a little bit, he likes to party down. I don't know, maybe I'm boring. Are you boring? Are you more boring than maybe?
No,
is your brother a partier?
I think there's my brother's not. I used to be, and now I'm not. I've quieted down as the senior years have approached. There's an intention that goes into relationships, and there are the people who you are around. It's easy with friendships to realize, like, oh, this was a friendship of convenience, or of even better word, a friendship of proximity. We were around each other for however long, whether it was school or otherwise. But when we are taken out of proximity of one another,
right.
How much do we come back to each other willingly? And it takes energy. It takes effort. It takes a certain level of consciousness to be like, where do I want to spend my energies? Who do I want to invest in? You don't do it for this reason, but who is also investing back?
This is a great conversation piece. This is, to me, this is kind of like you hit something here, which we don't talk about. But I also just, when you were talking, I felt like, wow, I nailed it. I know why my brother and I don't hang out now.
Tell me
the answer.
Say it.
I really feel like he thinks I'm boring. I think that when we hang out, you know, he'll hang out, he'll go, I'll get all my friends together and we'll go to Six Flags for my birthday. We'll hit the Olive Garden every year, same time. I'll organize softball games. I'll have Thanksgiving. I'll have like events. I'll have movie nights.
Sure.
And my brother's like, it bores him. He's like, you know, I want to go out to a bar. I want to hit it with my friends. I want to go to a Dead concert. I want to go to a Fish concert. I want to get drunk. I want to party.
And so you have different interests.
And you're boring. I think he's like, I don't think he's boring. I wish that he would just enjoy the world I live in where I don't party a lot.
Right.
And I think maybe there's part of me that feels like he thinks I judge him a little bit.
Mm.
And that's not entirely wrong. It's not that I judge him. I just don't want to be around him when he's drunk. Okay. I love him. I think he's a brilliant, beautiful human being, a heart of gold. I learn a lot from him. But I think that he feels like, you know, if he has a couple more beers and he gets drunk, I don't like seeing him like that.
Do you guys, have you talked about that?
We've had that in the past. I don't, it's been so long since I've seen him sort of like that. So I'm sure he still, you know, gets, so I worry about him and I don't want to worry about him. Like my problem is in life is I worry about people.
Younger brother?
Younger brother. He's 6 years younger, but I worry about people. I worry about my mom. I worry about my dog too much. I worry about things that haven't happened. Mm-hmm. I'm working on that.
And do you think people pick up on that? Do you think they can feel you worrying about them?
Well, or they can I'm inadvertently judging them.
Well, the worry comes across as
judgment, as
uncertainty as to this person's choices or uncertainty as to this person's path.
Yes. And you know what I do? I was talking to this girl recently and we were just talking on the phone.
No.
And she's like, yeah, I'm on my fourth glass of champagne. And I hadn't even been on a date with her. We were just talking. I was like, oh, cool. Do you? And then immediately in my brain, I go, are you a big drinker? You know, then I'm like, oh shit, she's a good drinker. I don't want to deal with that. Yeah. Well, I drink. I like to have a glass of wine or two a night, you know, before I, you know, and I'm like, oh, that sounds like an alcoholic, you know, and I'm starting to judge. But here's the thing. I'm not judging. I'm just going, do I want to go out with someone who drinks a lot?
Sure.
So I'm gauging.
Is
this wrong?
No. Is the desire to sit at home alone and drink four glasses of champagne, does that indicate the other types of choices that a person makes in their life? Yes.
I mean, maybe.
I mean, maybe. Maybe.
Well, I don't do that. I might take a puff off a joint.
Hey.
I might have a beer.
Hey.
But I'm not going to lose control. And I don't need to do it every night.
Again, it's only a problem if it makes your life unmanageable.
Well, you're someone I could take advice from because I think a lot of people out there could take advice because you don't drink anymore, do you?
No.
You don't do drugs anymore.
Nope. Stopped all that 2.5 years ago.
When did that start?
What do you mean?
When did the drinking and all that start?
Late. I mean, quote unquote, late for me, probably when I was about 19, 20.
So right out of high school, you were good. You were good through grade school.
Yeah, I was an athlete.
Football?
Tennis.
Are you effing kidding me?
Yeah. Can you believe that?
I played varsity tennis 1 year before I quit to play some hockey.
Yeah, I played. I went to Loyola Marymount on a scholarship.
For tennis?
Yeah.
Can we play tennis?
Of course
I'm about to join the tennis club up there.
Of course
Don't think I'm like a little hoity-toity actor guy. I'm just, I like tennis. I don't own a pool.
I don't think anybody believes that you're hoity-toity.
Well, I don't want him to think, oh, look, he's joining a tennis club. Who's at the tennis club? Who is it, Dan Fogelbergo there? You guys don't even know Dan Fogelberg. Fuck. But you know Dan Fogelberg, right?
Yes.
The leader of the band is Ty, and his eyes are growing old.
And a lot of people confuse him with Dan Fogelman, who's the runner of my show.
I know.
People will frequently be like, oh, like Dan Fogelberg.
Oh, my God, you do music and TV. Yeah. Yeah, he does a lot. Fogelman's done a ton of shit.
I played tennis all through my youth, and then had my schedule at freshman year of college was tennis practice 5 to 8, 8 a.m. to noon classes, back to tennis practice in the afternoon, dinner. And then I was a theater major. And so all theater rehearsals are in the evening.
Wait, did you have any time to sleep?
No. And so I would go to theater rehearsal from 7 to 10, 11, midnight, and then would crash.
I'm getting anxiety.
Yeah. Well, I had a bit of a nervous breakdown about halfway through freshman year and was like, I got to pick one of these things. And, you know, professional actor, professional athlete.
Could you have gone to play?
I could have.
I mean, you're a big dude.
If I had stayed healthy and if I had committed, I could have played professionally. I could have played on a tour. I wouldn't have been anything of note. And I probably would have enjoyed coaching, but
I can't wait to smack some balls with you.
Yeah.
I really can't wait to just stroke some.
I have two really good wooden rackets. We could play with wooden rackets.
Do you know one of my first interviews, we're going to re-release that one. I was Jimmy Connors.
Jimmy Connors was my favorite tennis player growing up.
Oh,
I told you
too.
About that. I haven't heard. He did have really good legs.
Great legs. I
have a photo of me at age 16 with those little tiny tennis shorts. And I played doubles with Billie Jean King I can't remember who else was in the photo. It was like a charity thing, but right. I was one of the local youth players. And from the waist up, I am a gangly 16-year-old freckled kid. And from the waist down, I have the legs, the tanned legs of a 35-year-old professional tennis player.
Just bulky.
It looks muscular, photoshopped.
Muscular.
It looks photoshopped.
I want to see this photo.
Yeah, I got to track it.
Maybe when we put this interview out, you could post that.
Yeah, yeah.
Wouldn't that be great?
I'll have my mom find it.
I want to see those legs.
Yeah, they were really nice. They are now. They're still the things I have left from my tennis career.
Do you have large balls?
I saw you look, Rob.
I was enjoying them.
He's got nice legs. Do you have large balls?
What's that? Average.
I'm asking that because as a tennis player, the shorts are so short that I feel like if you have big balls, you could have problems.
Probably.
Right? It'd be uncomfortable to have big balls.
Probably.
You're not going to answer. You.
I told you. I don't know. I have average-sized testicles.
Rob?
He wants to see them.
No, your balls. I bet Sully here has got bigger balls than you.
He's a taller man than me, so.
It doesn't matter. Shaq doesn't necessarily have to have giant balls.
Come into it.
No, it should because it'd be a shame if you were 6'5 and you had like little blueberry balls.
I guess if I was like a large egg, not an extra large, but like a large...
Hey, all right, so you know what you were talking about?
Go to the grocery store to get two large eggs.
That's eggs.
That's my guess.
I would say mine are. Those are big. Eggs are big balls.
I don't mean large, like
ostrich eggs.
I mean like
a brown
like
egg.
They're labeled like.
Yeah, like large, free range. Yeah,
free range.
Sullivan brown eggs.
Yeah, nothing. Yeah, not like something like a free range, grass fed, cage
Vital
free.
Farms.
Well, it's a little spits on the.
Do you have one
side.
That's bigger than the other?
I think I'm pretty even.
I think I have one that's a little. I think I had a hernia as a child that's never been fixed. But like when I breathe, I could sort of make my balls breathe.
Well, that's normal.
Is
that's
it? Normal, yeah. So when I go, they kind of go up and down. That's normal because I had a girlfriend. She's like, "Oh my god, that's not normal. Your balls breathe."
No, that's normal.
Yeah. Thank God. I'm 46. Yeah. Thank God. I thought I was dying.
I mean, they don't have nostrils that take
no,
air.
No, but they breathe when I breathe. They go up and down, up and down.
I think you're all right.
So you quit tennis. You want to be an actor. But where did the booze start? Hanging out with those theater folk?
I mean, it just started in college. And yeah, the theater world's pretty conducive to a cocktail. And eventually, you know, over the years, it becomes more ingrained in your life and in your patterns and in eventually, I just realized it was not contributing to the best version of myself.
What were the symptoms? What were the thoughts that hey, they always say when you hit rock bottom. Mm-hmm. Like for instance, I lost a girlfriend, not to death, but we stopped dating because I broke up with her. This is years ago, and then I made the wrong decision, and I didn't get her back because she wouldn't take me back, and I felt like you know what. I did that. I've got to change my ways because I caused it. Why did I break up with her? I'll never do that again. It was for the wrong reasons. Mm-hmm. There was something that made me change my philosophy.
Well, rock bottom is just where you decide to turn around and go back the other direction.
So what was your rock bottom?
I mean, 2 years ago, as we were moving into This Is Us, I had just realized that it had become a totally unconscious part of my life. And... It was happening a lot all the time and
unconscious and it, part of your life.
Yeah, like this is
just the norm.
Oh, and dinner and after shows and with people and the best time for me to make a change in my life is when, especially when there's a physical change, like a location change. So moving to a new city is the perfect time to.
Change it up.
And basically it started as a little bit of a challenge. And then I was like, you know what? I've never slept better. I have never felt better. I didn't realize how constantly kind of hungover I always was, whether it was just from inflammation in my body or a dull headache or kind of groggy. And here we are feeling good. Lost 20-25 pounds.
So that's ultimately it, because usually somebody will say, oh, I got a DUI, or oh, I did this, or oh, I did something I really...
That's the interesting part about quote-unquote rock bottom is I heard someone say, you know, is it's just when you decide to turn around and go back the other direction.
Did you not like yourself, or it wasn't that?
I think I probably didn't like myself. I think I probably still struggle with liking myself. I found myself... making jokes that would get me in trouble. You know, you get a little loose, you start making a joke, making somebody uncomfortable. I started having to apologize to people. I'm like, hey, sorry about that joke.
I was trying to make it funny. I've done that, and I
always take it one step. Not always, but I used to take it, you know, one step too far, and I was got sick of just like not being present. You know, I would be around all of these amazing people, and I take the alcohol out of my life, and I realized that I ended up in a lot of places I didn't really want to be. I was like, I was only there because the alcohol removed the inhibition and the anxiety. Now I'm like, let's stay home. Let's go to bed early. Let's see the sun come up, you know?
I've actually said, man, maybe I should start drinking. I'm really boring. You know, it's like, hey, I'm going to Universal Horror Nights tonight.
Why is that boring?
I don't know. It's not boring. That's fun.
Why are you worried that you're boring?
You know, when your friends call you grandpa or like, oh, it's 10:30. We better get Rosenbaum to bed. It's just, you know, it's not like it hurts. It's just kind of like, fuck, man, they're right. But I can't do anything about it because I am kind of tired.
They're not right. Who says they're right? Why? At some point, something's got to give, right? At some point, we should be evolving. And if you're tired, you go to bed. What I realized is I was tired all the time, and I would bypass that feeling with whiskey if you stay up long enough, you'll catch a second wind, and you're ignoring your body's time clock.
Yeah,
so
you're fucked.
What's the benefit of staying up late versus getting up early?
Chris, I want to rewind here. I'm going to rewind about 3 minutes and 33 seconds. Okay. I bet it's close to being on the dot.
Rob?
You said, I don't know if I really like myself now, or something along those lines.
Yeah.
And that struck me. When you say something like, I can't just let that slide.
No.
That. Because I've suffered with that. I think Rob suffers with that. Jennifer Love Hewitt was on the show. She talks about that. I think everybody I talk to in some way, I mean, the goal is you want to like yourself. You want to love yourself. When people say you can't love another until you love yourself, that scares me.
Correct.
So what is it about you? I see a guy who's happily married. I see a guy who has a huge career. I see a guy who's handsome, who's a former great tennis player, who has wonderful legs, plump-sized balls, egg-shaped. But, like, what is it about you that you just go,
Listen, basic core beliefs, right? These basic core beliefs that we all have, however they get in there, it could be the smallest thing, it could be the largest thing. We all have something. We all have this inner critic that says you're not good enough, that says you're not lovable, you're incapable of loving others, you're worthless. Like, Even if it's on a very small level, and I'm not saying I don't like myself, I do, especially today. I do a lot of work on myself.
Tell me.
But those feelings still come up. My wife and I were reading this article. So it was about the seven deadly sins, and it was about
Can we name them all real quick? Sloth, envy, pride,
greed, lust.
Gluttony,
and wrath.
Wrath, come wrath! Don't look in the box. Don't open the box.
Oh, God,
come on, do it!
In the box?
Come on, do it! Become wrath! Do it!
What's
no,
in the
God
box?
Damn it. Open the box! Don't open the box! John Doe's got the upper hand. John Doe's got the upper hand. Open the box! Become wrath! Do it! Sorry.
Wow.
I don't even know.
You switched through a bunch of those characters.
I was a little spacey and a little bit. You were doing the pit and I was doing the Freeman.
Yeah, right, you got a little Freeman in there.
Okay, sorry.
Originally there was an eighth one that got rolled up into sloth called acedia.
Acedia.
And acedia is this feeling that the desert monks who had come up with this idea originally believed was the worst of all of them. And it was the noonday demon. And it was this demon that gets inside you that says, you're not good enough. That says, the world is a terrible place. It's essentially this kind of rust on the bottom of a car that if you don't take care of it, it slowly spreads and it takes 15, 20, 30 years for the bottom to fall out of this car. It is frequently mislabeled as depression, but it's this feeling of worthlessness and that the world is a terrible place that eats away at me or at a lot of people. But I believe that all of these years when I thought, oh, maybe I'm depressed, maybe I need this, maybe I need this, is this idea of it's just negative self-talk. It's negative self-thinking. It's low self-esteem. It's a lot of things rolled up into one, but it seems to be like it was too complicated an idea that it was like, laziness. We'll just call it laziness. We'll call it sloth. And that type of thinking is something that you have to actively fight against, because we all have it inside us. That you look around at everything that's happening in the world. If you look around long enough and you're not depressed by what you see, I don't know anyone who, especially now, is able to kind of process everything that's happening in the world without ending up a little down.
Acedia. Tell me about how you deal with it, how every day. It sounds to me like it's part of like cognitive behavioral theory, therapy.
Yeah.
You know, thinking positively, changing the way you think, correct?
Yeah, therapy. It's living in conscious gratitude, writing it down, sharing it with others.
Rob, will you write this down? Seriously. I'm not going to listen to this because I'm doing it right now. Well, write that down because I want to do that. Writing down positive things like, I am grateful I have a new puppy, Blanche.
You know what we could do every day? And I do it with a couple of my friends. We have a couple, my wife and I have different text threads going. Today I am grateful for ... three things. You and I could do that. And we could do it every day. And it doesn't have to be a big conversation. Gosh. It could be three things that we just send to each other. And when it's written down and when it's shared with someone else, it becomes this tangible thing in our lives that we can use throughout the day to remember, to kind of get outside of ourselves.
Do you know why I think I have a Acedia? Because I just got what you're telling us. I got a little emotional. I didn't, you know, but I felt something like, this is a really nice thing to do.
Mm-hmm.
This is a good thing to do. This is a positive thing to do. This could change. I don't know what it was, but when you were saying that, just saying, you know, waking up instead of going, all right, how do I tackle the world?
Mm-hmm.
How do I do this? How do I, you know, conquer? How do I make money? It's like waking up and just going, hey, God bless, man.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, Chris, I just want to say, I think your legs are awesome. Hey,
I would like that. I really
appreciated you coming over yesterday. I'm grateful to have you in my home. Such a positive energy in my house. That'd be like a nice thing to say. Rob, thanks for taking a shit in my house. I'm glad you were relieved, even though I wasn't.
He doesn't want to carry that around with him.
Right. These are like, I think this is a healthy thing. So that's one of the things you do.
Yeah, prayer, meditation, connection with a higher power, connection with other people. One of the other things my wife and I were talking about, this article kind of put it perfectly that we were reading, is that happiness is not the goal. Usefulness is the goal.
Usefulness. If I misinterpret, if I didn't ask you, I go, God, youthfulness. I got to get some Botox. How am I going to get younger? I'm going to get younger.
Usefulness is, how many people have we heard in interviews or when you talk to them, what do you want in life?
Happiness.
I just want to be happy. The happiness is not a goal. An emotion is not a goal. You cannot set an emotional state as a goal because emotional states are not constant. They're constantly coming and going.
See, you are smarter than me. You are. I don't know this stuff. You're smarter than me.
I don't know this either. This is just what I believe to be true for myself.
All right.
This is not this
usefulness.
Is not usefulness. So how do I achieve if happiness is what I want? If happiness is something that I would like
to feel
more of in my life, if something I would like to feel more of, how do I achieve that? Which is the question nobody asks. Okay, well, how do you do that? Being of service to the people that I love, being of service to the people around me, being useful, being kind, being generous, being empathetic, being compassionate, trying to do one good deed every day. Like, these are things that at the end of the day I can look back and hope that I have left a wake of kindness in my life instead of destruction or pain or misery. Thanks for having me. This has been great. I'm sorry for the monologue.
Rob, how do you feel about this?
I like it.
Are you gonna, do you think you do enough of what he's talking about? Or do you feel like, you know what? Wow, this is profound, man. I actually want to just be better at this.
I don't do enough of that, but I see where value would come from it.
I bet you do. I bet it's not grand gestures. It's not
I mean,
running
more,
a charity, it's like
more being conscious about what you're grateful for.
Yeah,
right. You know what? Why don't we start? Why don't we start every morning? I'll just say, "Hey, I'm grateful for you, Rob."
Or
grateful for something.
Yeah.
You know,
we'll get a group text going.
I think it's good. I think even, you know, I'll maybe text you. I mean, look, I just think it's important. That's just one facet of it. But it's like being appreciative. What I'm gathering is having gratitude, but usefulness, like saying, hey, how can I help someone else today? How can I be a usefulness to them? Right. How could I facilitate their happiness or their, you know, and that what will make you.
What do you need? Happy. What are you in need
of? Altruistically.
Sure.
Right? It's sort of doing it not for your own personal gain, but doing it because it should make you feel
even
good.
Even if you
people.
Are. Even if you are doing it because it makes you feel good.
Oh, good.
I think that's a good enough reason.
But what if you're doing it because you're like, hey, I'm going to do this nice thing for someone because then I'll feel like I did something nice for someone. That's not the attitude you should have.
But it's still what happens. I mean,
but it sounds like artificial.
Even Kristen talks about that with all like the charitable stuff that she does. That's how she gets self-esteem, is through that.
And everyone is winning. It doesn't. Now, if you're doing good deeds, expecting something back from that person,
then maybe that's not good.
It's a dangerous path. But,
yeah, like I'm helping a homeless, and I'm hoping that God will give me something nice for it.
Right, but
that's not good.
Right.
Yeah, and then getting mad when something good doesn't come to you.
I fed the homeless today. Why can't you? Why couldn't you give me this Prius I wanted?
Really? I feed the homeless and Rob shits in my bathroom?
Really? This is what it's going to come to.
Today, I am grateful for these three. But yeah, it seems to be people have placed too much value on being happy or setting an emotion as a goal. It just doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, because I don't know how many times on my stickies I would put, be happy. That's not the way to do it. It's be useful.
Yeah.
Be useful. Be present. Be appreciative. Be.
Right. Be
That's
of service.
That's my new t-shirt. Want to buy one?
I'll take it. I get a free one. I can't.
You get a free one?
Yeah.
I like that
shirt.
I'll
advertise it.
Rob, write that down. Did you hear what I said?
No, I wasn't listening.
Be useful. Be grateful. Be.
Yep. It's really rolling off the
nailed
tongue.
It.
Fuck! Rewind! Go back! I don't remember. I can't remember. Hey, so... do you have like, are you hot yet?
No.
You're still comfortable?
No. Are you running hot? I feel great.
No, I just wanted to make sure you're
it's
not
nice
hot. I like my guests to be. Yeah. You're out of coffee too. You're all right. Yeah, I got a water there though.
No, I'm great.
A hint water, pineapple. It's good for your.
For your what?
How is it? I'm going to give you a case. Yeah. You just got a case of hint waters. And now he's going to smoke a big bomb. Hey, you know, when you're on these shows, because you seem like...
When you say these shows, you're talking about podcasts?
No. I'm talking about the camping with Jennifer Garner.
Yeah.
And I'm talking about This Is Us with Milo Ventimiglia.
Yeah.
And, you know, Mandy Moore and Justin Hartley and all these great people. And you work constant Guardians of the Galaxy 2. You've been on... you've been on tons of stuff. Do you get nervous still before a scene?
I don't get...
Do you get worked up? Do you
I don't get nervous... But I do get in my head, and I do believe that I am able to it's hard. I have conflicting.
Is it a day-to-day thing? If you have a big scene, you might get nervous.
It is a day-to-day thing. I have been in a slump recently as far as my confidence in my work.
Wow.
And it's hard to talk about because it's self-reflective and it's navel-gazing. But I believe I've had an honest look at myself without being overly emotional or critical. I recently had an episode on This Is Us where I had a big emotional arc that
Toby
that ended in a emotional breakdown. I felt like my work in that episode was completely unpresent and not real. I came home at the end of the day and I sat down with my wife and I was like, I didn't do it today. I didn't do it. Didn't happen. I did my best. I worked hard, but the thing that I thought would arrive did not arrive. And she walked me through that kind of analysis of my work, because I also don't believe that you can be a creator and a critic. You can be one or the other. You don't get to be both. As an artist or as a creative person, your job is to create, and whether or not it is any good is none of your business. That is my opinion. But at the end of the day, I didn't feel good. I know that.
Is it something that you could just tell by the director, you could tell by other cast members, that like they're looking at me like I'm not getting this?
I try not to read too much into other people's feeling, because then I'll just go down a rabbit hole. But I was just going off of my feeling that at the end of the day, I was like, that wasn't it. That was not it. Now, do I have enough craft and ability
to wing it,
to make it, to even if it's not happening, to make it look like it's happening? I hope so. I've been told that it came off all right.
Oh, wait. Who called you and said, hey, Chris? Hey, it's Ron, first AD. I just want you to know that, no, your scene came off all right. It wasn't as bad as you thought. It was all right.
No, this is the largest group of people that I will be sharing, that I've shared with, that I didn't think it went well. I only shared that with my wife. It was important for me as that day was going. I didn't let anyone else know that I thought it was going that way. I didn't pout. I didn't sulk.
Did you think about it?
Throw a tantrum. Yeah, I got close. And I noticed I could feel myself prickling up at somebody doing something and me wanting to lash out at
it. Like, it's your fault for making that noise.
And I would throw blame in my head.
And you stopped yourself. You're not doing that. No, this is you.
And that's the difference between 2 or 3 years ago and today. And I was able to walk out, do the work, and go home to the appropriate person, my partner in this life,
and
be like, oh, it just didn't happen. I didn't feel
it. And you
it.
Also said 2.5 years ago, you were insinuating that maybe alcohol would have taken you
not
down
alcohol,
a different path.
Not alcohol, unconsciousness. My inability to be conscious of the things that I was feeling, because it was my anxiety and it was my fear of...
Do you get anxiety?
Sure.
What do you feel when you get anxiety?
I have a tightness in my chest. My
tingling arms?
Recently I had a nice panic attack with a migraine variant. Did you know that migraines come in forms that aren't just headaches?
I've never had a migraine. I have a horrible neck and back, but no migraines.
I mean, there's something to be grateful for.
Yeah. Yeah. if you think about it.
I mean, if the neck and back thing should give you the worst headaches.
That's what my doctors all said.
And
what you just said is
that.
Like, oh, you got stabbed in the back. Oh, well, at least they didn't stab you in the heart.
Hey.
But that's grateful. Right. I could have died.
And I had this migraine variant where I was in the car and all of a sudden my hand started, I was leaning on the center console and my hand started to go numb and I was like, oh, I've put my hand to sleep. And then I was like, I was shaking my hand out.
And it wouldn't go away.
And it wouldn't go away.
And that goes and in your
started,
head now.
And it started coming up my arm.
You thought you were having a heart attack.
And then what happened was, it was the weirdest thing. It was psychedelic. The messages from my brain to my hand as to what to do were backed up like a traffic jam. And it was like my hand was three thoughts behind. And I lost control of my hand. And I tried to like pick up my phone to get my wife on the line. And I stumbled and like knocked it over. And then I felt it in my foot. And it started coming up my leg. And it was the entire right side of my body went like white noise, like tingly.
For no reason, really?
Anxiety. Anxiety.
I mean, yeah, but it came about like out of nowhere.
I was in traffic, which doesn't really bother me that much.
You thought you were dying.
I thought I was having a heart attack. And I pulled over and ended up in urgent care. And the urgent care doctor was the best. He had the weirdest bedside manner. He was like, I think you're all right, but do you think we should get you to the hospital? His like voice went up and he's like, do you think maybe we should like, he was leaving it up to me.
Hey, I think you look great, but we should do a brain scan.
Do you think?
What?
Was it Jim Gaffigan?
Yeah. Do you think that maybe I should do a thing? And so anxiety shows up in many different ways, but frequently I know I'm feeling anxiety when I start feeling anger, when I'm like, when I'm frustrated, when I'm short. And it's not
really tired
or tired. I'm not actually angry with anybody. I'm feeling nervous. I'm feeling fearful. I'm feeling, and my way of protecting myself from those feelings is to lash out or to blame.
So what can you do? What helps you to not have these moments? I mean, can you control them? Cause I take something a little bit for anxiety when I go to bed at night, something a really low dose, but you know, it started because I was on a show, the show Impastor, where I was in every scene and I was exhausted and running around and tired and not eating right, not sleeping enough. And one day I barely got through this big scene outside and I looked at my assistant Troy and I said, "Hey man, call Dr. Lim, have him come over to the trailer. I think something's wrong with me." And he did all these tests and he goes, "Michael, have you ever had anxiety?" And it's almost like the worst thing he could have said.
Yeah.
Because then from there on out for the last, thank God it was the end of the season, it was only two episodes left, but I had a couple of anxiety attacks on the set that no one knew about. Like you with your other issues, I held it together and in the middle of the scene we're about to go and I'm having an anxiety attack. It's so debilitating that I don't think I could perform the scene.
Right.
I literally am numb and trembling all over and my body's like exhausted.
Right.
I'm feeling it now. Like,
and the anxiety attacks in my experience come about by trying to ignore or stifle the things that I'm feeling. So if I have these feelings that come up and I can feel them start to bubble, if I try to ignore them, if I try to pretend, if I'm not conscious of them and start like being overly funny, trying to with the jokes.
Right.
Right. You lead with comedy. Comedy right. is one of your armors, yep. one of your shields that you can
covers
hold
me,
up
helps me.
To be like keep situations or people at arm's length.
Yep.
I do the same thing. If I ignore that feeling long enough, like a traffic jam, eventually that feeling is gonna step to the front and be like, no, you're gonna pay attention. And here's how strong I have to be for you to realize that anxiety is what you're feeling. And that is an anxiety attack for me.
Have you ever had like, I'm not trying to be funny here. So don't think because I'm going to bowel movements when I talk about them. But do you ever have it like where you're so like all of a sudden you have so much anxiety that it makes you like really fucking exhausted and you have to go to the bathroom a lot?
That's not my experience.
No.
Of it.
Rob, have you ever had an anxiety attack like that?
No. That's number one. Makes you have to pee.
No, poop.
Oh.
Sometimes I have to poop a couple times and I get really like, it doesn't happen a lot. Like I've been controlling a bit. Like every once in a while at a convention, if I'm signing,
yeah,
I'm excited to be there.
You get a nervous stomach.
All of a sudden I get anxiety. Like sure. All these people, all these things, are there going to be anybody there to see me?
It's your body's way of removing you from a situation. You have to go to the bathroom and sit down.
Wow, I didn't think of that.
It's a survive.
Get me out of here.
Your body's like, we need to get out of here for a second. Take a deep breath.
And I hear that the best thing you could do in general is don't run from the situation.
Right.
Stay where you are. Let it pass. Fight it. Do not run because then your body's going to know if you run.
Exactly.
You're going to keep doing that.
The adrenaline jacks up. But what I've realized, you know, now if I am conscious of these feelings and am willing to talk about them, that it not only lessens the feeling, but it actually provides the intimacy and connection with the people I'm around that everyone appreciates. And it's actually leading to stronger relationships. Like if I can say to my wife, instead of complaining about going somewhere or getting mad about something stupid, if I could say, you know what, actually I'm feeling a lot of anxiety right now. My chest is tight. My stomach is hurting. I'm afraid that I'm feeling fear that if I go to this place, to this party with you, that I'm not going to know anyone. Everyone's going to be drunk except for me. And I don't enjoy that. And having that conversation and getting all of those things out, by the time I'm done with the sentence, the feeling is lessened.
Right.
I can go to the event with my wife. She knows what I'm feeling, so she can stay present with me, stay connected.
Interesting.
Not leave me alone.
What about, what about you sort of just saying it? Like if you're on set and I have an anxiety attack, hey guys, I'm having a little anxiety attack right now, but I'm going to deal with it.
Yeah.
So if I freak out a little bit, that's what's happened. I get a little anxiety.
Yeah, I'm having hey guys, I'm having an anxiety attack or just going to the second AD and just being like, and I don't know what to do, but if I could have 10 minutes in my trailer, that'd be great. And oftentimes when you hear about this actors and their terrible behavior, they wouldn't come out of their trailer for 2 hours.
Anxiety.
I guarantee you that person is not in their trailer going perfectly calm and conscious,
right,
and saying, I'm going to make all these people wait because I'm important and they're not.
Do you know? Yeah.
They're freaking out.
Do you know what happened to me just now when you said that? Now I go to the fucking trailer and I'm thinking, he's telling everybody and everybody's talking about me and I have anxiety and what the fuck's wrong with me. And now they're all looking at me when I come in. I just better just tell everybody.
Then
that's why I think I tell everybody, hey, I got to go take a shit. They're like, all right, thanks for the information, because I don't want you to think I'm taking a shit or that I shit when I get back. There's something crazy about that, but I fucking do it, Chris.
You engage in therapy, correct?
Well,
you have a therapist.
Yes.
How much fecal talk is there in therapy? Have we figured out what it's about?
I've asked him. I say sometimes I feel like, you know, my uncle was...
Because I've listened to the podcast and we're friends.
Do I talk a lot of shit?
Yeah.
I talk about shit a lot?
Yeah.
I do.
You and Steve Agee.
I don't really think I talk about shit a lot. I'll ask the guys out there, whoever's listening, do I talk about shit too much?
Hashtag too much shit talk.
How much too much shit?
And farts count as shit talk.
Farts are an aftermath or a foremath.
That video you sent me was wonderful.
Oh, yeah, I sent you a video.
Was that just for me? That wasn't just for me.
No, it was probably three other people.
Yeah.
Three other people. My friend Chris enjoys, Chris McDonald loves when I send him fart videos in the elevator or at a hotel. We don't do poop stuff, but we do, like, you know, I'll show him my feet at a hotel, like in Paris.
Yeah.
And it's just my feet, so he knows I'm taking a crap.
Yeah.
So we do that. So you can do that. That'd be a grateful thing. Like, I'm grateful to, you know.
So I wonder what's behind all of the obsession.
Well,
I'll tell you,
I think my uncle once told me, he's a psychologist, and he had a patient who had the fear of shitting his pants in public.
Mm-hmm.
That which shouldn't be a fear of mine, because I have done it, and I, you know, but I don't know. He just always feared, like, he wouldn't go out because he was gonna. I don't know what it is. I don't have a fear of that, but I have, like, I don't like shitting in public places. I can't shit in a plane. If it's a 14-hour flight and I have to shit, I'm in trouble. I don't know what I'm gonna do. I just feel like that if there's more than one stall, I'm okay. But if there's one stall and I feel there's people out there, I'm disappointing them. They're going to knock on the door. They're going to be there. I got to hurry. They're waiting. Then they're going to know I shit. Do you guys ever think of stuff like that?
No.
No.
See?
Did anyone ever make you feel guilty about shitting when you were younger? Like your mom?
No, my brother shit his pants once we were raising money for the hockey league.
Yeah.
And I made fun of him shitting his pants, and my dad threatened my life. He said, "Don't you ever bring this up again, embarrass your brother." I'm like,
well, that's interesting.
He wiped it on the walls.
That's interesting.
Your
relationship to it is actually due to the thing that you fear the most is what you did to your brother.
Ooh, I didn't think about that.
Yeah, and you are the one that makes announcements at parties.
Yeah, I just announced that you took a shit, and the first thing I said is
to my wife.
I called you out.
My wife, the first time I brought her over here at a party, said, "Were you in there shitting in front of like 20 people?"
Was she upset?
No, she wasn't upset. She said, I think her response was, "I would have shit in your bed if..."
Well, you know what? Maybe there's something there. This is why I do this podcast, so I learn something.
Because the things that I find myself the most afraid of are the things that I am guilty of. So if I'm worried, that's why things like gossip and things like shit talking and things like that, especially in like a work environment, are again like rust on the bottom of a car.
Yeah, I really don't do that. I try not to talk shit about people. I really, really try that.
If you and I have a conversation about a third person and there's some part in the back of my mind that says, wow, if Michael's willing to talk to me about a third person, is he willing to talk to another person about me? Even if it's not conscious, like on that level.
Yeah, it's smart.
We have now eroded our relationship.
Yeah. The trust. There's a trust.
There's like a trust.
You know, I'll tell you something. This is I have a lot of flaws, and I've talked about this every episode. But the one flaw I don't have, if a stranger came up to me with a secret, I wouldn't tell anybody. I'm like that. If somebody tells me something, I don't feel the urge to go tell everybody. I feel like if I tell Rob something, I hope he keeps it between us. Mm-hmm. If I told you something...
You're also terrified. Every time you tell me the littlest thing, you say this is between us.
Well, because I'm very private. I don't want people knowing my business. And your success, you really blew up like in the last couple of years, right? I mean, your career...
After the Nick.
The Nick was the big show, and that was Soderbergh, right?
Yeah, the Nick was the thing that, including This Is Us... Every job I've gotten since then is directly because of the Nick.
That's it.
Yeah.
But when you first got This Is Us, mm-hmm. you weren't signed on as a regular character, were you?
No.
Can you talk about that?
Well, I think I can. You know, contracts in this industry are complicated, but when I got the pilot for This Is Us, the Nick was still... I was still contracted to that show, and that show hadn't been canceled yet. So in order to get me into the pilot, they had to sign me up as a guest star or a recurring character.
Right.
The pilot was shot. I went from the pilot to shooting Guardians. And by the time Guardians was done, This Is Us got picked up. I guess before the pilot, first episode of This Is Us Kid come out, they released a trailer on Facebook. They got 90 million views, and NBC realized that they were going to have something. At that point, I was released from the Nick. There was not going to be any more of that. And they came back and asked if, instead of my one-year contract, if I would sign for six.
I think there's a word called leverage.
Yes.
So you had a little leverage.
A little bit. A little bit.
Right. So
but
that's
I was
good.
Still very young in the, still am very.
How
new.
Much fun is it, and how inspiring is it to be on a show? Because I've only been on one really big show, successful show. I've been done a lot of shows that aren't successful or only lasted a year or 2 years.
Yeah,
I know what the impact that it had on me and still does to this day. I mean, you were on two shows that had a big impact, but This Is Us had a global.
Yeah.
Global reaction, right?
Yeah, This Is Us. The thing that I've realized about my experience in television is that it's completely unique to the television landscape. Doing The Nick with Soderbergh, there's nothing that happens on that show that I can apply experience-wise to anything else I've ever done. It's completely unique. Soderbergh works in a way that is completely unique to him. The show, the format of the show, 10 episodes on Cinemax, it was a formative and educational experience. The things that I learned there, certain tools I gathered, but I couldn't expect any other show to operate like that. Coming onto This Is Us is the same thing. The level with which everyone on this show loves each other is statistically impossible.
There's no one you go, ugh.
No, there's not one person.
And you know what? I agree. I believe you because I know a lot of these people,
yeah.
Except for Mandy. And but everyone, they're all really good people.
Yeah, and everyone shows up and is supportive and prepared and compassionate and efficient and creative, and it all comes from the top down. Dan Fogelman, your favorite musician.
The leader of the band is tired, his eyes are growing old.
Is an amazing leader and a guy who keeps the kind of the ship pointed in the right direction.
Where do you want this show to head? I mean, especially for your character, for Toby, like for the fans out there, where would you like to see him go? Are there some things like you read a script and you go, hey, this is cool, this is nice, and I'm sure there's some episodes you're like, oh, I don't do much here.
Yeah.
Or, you know, is there something that you want to do that you're like, I want to go to the creators and talk to them. I hope that they could arc it out this way, you know?
They've opened that up to us, which is also rare for the writer's room to be open to the cast as much as ours is. I try to stay out of that. I feel like that is that muddies the waters a little bit for me. If I was 1, 2, 3, 4 on the call sheet, maybe I would involve myself a little more. But number 7 on the call sheet doesn't need to be.
I want to be number 7 on the call sheet.
Number 7 on the call
That's
sheet.
Great. You work 2 days a week, maybe.
Yeah.
And then you just have a life.
Yep. Have
and
a life.
You're still on a hit show.
Yep.
What a treat.
Get some really good scenes.
Yep. Yep.
Chance to show up and be part of an amazing ensemble.
But you're still doing camping on the off season.
That's right.
And you do 10 episodes of that.
We did 8 episodes, half hour each, and that was limited series, so that's done.
And where is that? That's a limited series. It's done.
Yeah. That's on HBO.
I'm going to watch that. Have you seen it yet?
Yeah, I've seen the first
couple. Oh, yeah, you told me. You said he's really good on that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And Jenix Bravo and Brad are great on that.
Yeah, check that out on HBO, Camping. This Is Us, obviously. It's everywhere. I've never even auditioned for This Is Us. I could easily play your brother.
Yeah, actually, Toby has a younger brother.
We could play tennis.
Do you think you could play 10 years younger than me?
With makeup. I have hair. See that?
Yeah. You do have hair.
Yeah.
And I don't, so that helps.
Yeah. Anyway, that's not important. Well, you know what? This has been a real treat. Look, I got to have you back because we didn't even scratch the surface. I want to talk about your music.
Yeah.
What's the band?
The first album was under Sully and the Benevolent Folk.
Right, the Benevolent Folk.
Right now I'm working on a second record with a gentleman named Taylor Goldsmith, who's the lead singer and songwriter for a band called Dawes.
Ooh, I know Dawes.
Yeah.
Dawes is great.
I met Taylor. He will be getting married very shortly to Mandy Moore. And he and I hit it off big time and started writing some songs together. And Yeah, should have a second album in a couple of months here.
Dude, I want to get him on the show. Maybe you both can come on the show.
Oh yeah, he would be a great guest.
Yeah, but maybe you guys could play a song.
We definitely could.
Are you a singer?
I am.
What songs do you think of when you want to sing, like from the 70s or 80s?
Oh, from the 70s or 80s.
How about if I sang something, could you sing the second part of it?
Sure.
And even though we ain't got money, I'm so in love with you, honey, and everything will bring a change. Love. Oh. And in the morning when I rise, bring a tear.
Do you have the rights for this?
Doesn't matter. We're singing it.
Yeah, we do.
Oh. We do have the rights. It's you know who sings that?
That is, give me a second.
Loggins.
Loggins, Kenny Loggins.
Nice. You do have a beautiful
Loggins
voice.
Loggins and Messina.
Grove Street Ghoul at Grove JC Gal. I'd love to hear a little about working with Soderbergh. You already said about working with Soderbergh. We don't have to do, you loved him. He's a genius, right?
He is.
Do you have a temper?
No, he's the calmest, most collected, organized creator I've ever worked with. He is the best performance on the Nick.
All right. That's really complimentary.
Like,
is that the right
there's
word?
A lot of great acting going on in that show, but the best performance in that show is Steven Soderbergh with the camera.
That's the character.
He is the character of that show.
At Haven Huth, can you ask Chris how many times a day gets called Taserface?
Three.
What was it like at Vivian Bloom filming Peter Pan Live? Christopher Walken stories.
That's right.
You worked with him.
I did work
He's
with him.
He's great. He doesn't talk much.
Well, see, he doesn't talk much. But you know what I got that you didn't get is I got old Walken. When you worked with him, he got a younger Walken. So it's easier to impersonate him because he's clipping along. The best story I have of Walken, he told us this story about going to an Italian restaurant. But his pauses.
It took an hour.
It took an hour for him to tell this story. So the reason I perked up, he goes, my friend Fabio told me about this restaurant. And it was like, Fabio
he's got a restaurant called Father's Ass.
And he goes, Fabio says this restaurant has Italian food just like my mama used to make. You got to go to this restaurant. You got to go to this restaurant. And so I'm condensing this to 1 minute. And so Walken eventually goes to the restaurant and says, Fabio sent me here. Says, you make food just like his mama. And the woman says, all Fabio ever orders is salad. That's the punchline to an hour-long story from Christopher Walken.
This is a salad.
Really? So this restaurant makes salad.
And you, of course, laugh. Going, ah!
Yeah.
That's the
But it is story. Also a ridiculous story that Fabio only orders salad, and that's the food that reminds him of his mom.
Do you think
mom.
It's a real story?
That's a good question.
I bet he makes this shit up now.
Is Christopher Walken a walking performance art piece?
I think he's a parody. I don't know, something that... Yeah, I think. Listen, man, this has been, I want to get you out of here. I know you had an appointment.
All right.
You're going to come back. This has been, you know, I knew it was going to be good, but like most of our talk was about real shit. And yeah. I like that. That's what I like about you. You're open, you're vulnerable, you're real. I think you helped me. I think you helped a lot of other people. I think you helped Rob.
We're going to get our gratitude text chain going.
I'd love that. I genuinely like you. I think you're a great dude. I want to work
same.
With you, but more importantly, I want to be friends with you. I want to know you.
I feel the same.
You know, you make me a better person, for sure. You're one of the few people that make me. There's people along the way. I'm not saying, I think there's a lot of people that make me a better person. Like, there's been people on the show that I'm like, you know what? Zach Levi makes me a better person. I think
like
Jennifer
that.
Love Hewitt makes
good.
Me a better person.
Those are good
interviews. You make me a better person. Dax makes me a good person. Kristen Bell. Rob here. Not as much.
He makes you a better person, but
well,
he brings out the worst in you.
Yeah, maybe so. Well, Chris Sullivan, thank you for allowing me to be inside of you. What's your handle?
Sullivan Grahams, at Sullivan Tweets.
Sullivan Grahams, Sullivan Tweets. Check him out, man. This is us. He's brilliant. Camping on HBO, Taserface, Guardians of the Galaxy 2. I mean, you're always working. He's going to work with the lead singer to Dawes. I love it. Thank you so much for being here, man.
My
this
pleasure.
It's awesome.
The Rolling Stone Music Now podcast gets inside the biggest stories with Rolling Stone senior writer Brian Hyatt.
Now here is my conversation with Jacob Knoll. Your story is an amazing one, and obviously you lost your dad when you're only 1 year old.
It was definitely a screwy way to grow up. I think that a lot of people never heard of who I am, and then they see me join this band and they must think this kid must have just handed everything, or nepotism kid. It's a gift that I have an opportunity to sing in such a big band like my father and my uncle's band, Sublime.
Rolling Stone Music Now, wherever you listen.